and welcome back for another episode of the Social Hour podcast, a podcast for sewists by sewists. I'm your host, Ashley.
And I'm your host, Bethany. And today on the podcast, we are joined by Trisha. She is the lovely lady behind Creative Costume Academy. Hi, Trisha.
Hi, ladies. So happy to be here.
Oh, we're so excited to talk to you. Now, I said Creative Costume Academy, but that's just a small portion of all the things that you do. So can you give our listeners a quick little synopsis of all the many things and all the talents that you have?
Sure. So Creative Costume Academy is kind of my overarching business online, but it's one of three businesses that I kind of currently run. So I come from a background of 20 years plus experience working and making costumes for big theatrical productions. So like Cirque du Soleil, Blue Man Group, Disney, those are some of my clients. I've been doing that professionally for a long time, and that was my career, still is actually. So that's one of my businesses. That's called The Patterned Seamstress. And I've had that business for, I think, about 13 years.
Wow.
And then Creative Costume Academy is my online handle on all social media platforms when I started doing stuff online. And now I have a membership, a private membership called The Pattern Place. And that is so Creative Costume Academy, The Pattern Place, where we focus on learning pattern making, because I call myself your pattern nerd friend. I love everything about pattern making. I'm just like enamored with that skill. I think it's super powerful and I love sharing it with others. So that's kind of where it started. And then I also am the lead instructor for Pattern Making Academy. And Pattern Making Academy is Mimi G's sister school, pattern making school to Sew It Academy. So those are my three businesses and
You're just pretty super busy. And so we're really grateful you were able to carve out some time to hang out with us today. But I have to say, like, you just amaze me at all the things that you do. And you do it with this, like, what are the words I'm looking for? Just this, this ease about you that just makes me like draw in and go, she just is so approachable and so easy to learn from and so much fun. You just take like the stress out of it. Like we've talked about pattern making, Ashley and I have both talked to you about it and we use some of your resources as well to kind of help fill in some gaps of things that we're trying to figure out as we start making our own patterns. And every time I reach out, you're just like, you've got this, you can do that. You know, you're just like my little cheerleader. And I'm just like, I love this. You need those people, you know, it's not easy, but you make it easy to approach it, and less scary and intimidating. So yeah, there's a big learning curve and you got a lot to learn and figure out, but you do walk you through it in such a calm, it's okay, we're going to do this together, I've got you, hold my hand kind of thing. And it's really nice. It's a nice approach. And I think that's why it does so well.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you so much.
I just had to tell you that. Like, the more I watch and the more I learn and the more I get involved in your content, I'm just like, ugh. Every time I always stop at your content. It's just so fun. Aww, so you can tell so you just live it and breathe it. Mm-hmm. And your passion shows, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So, yes.
Oh, that's great. But, yeah, I really feel like it's something that – I always say this, that pattern making, I feel like it has this stigma around it, that it's this like very regimented, have to do it this way. Mm-hmm. If you're not doing it that way, you're doing it wrong. And
like baking, right? You have to have the exact measurement or it's not going to rise or whatever.
and it scares people away. And I feel like it makes me sad that that's the case. So I've really, it's kind of like my mission out there is to bring joy and ease to pattern making. I mean, yes, it's a hard skill, but it's a powerful skill. And so it's a superpower. So yes, it's going to take some time to really like dig in and feel like you know what you're doing, but you can find easier ways to kind of crack into it. And so that's what I try. I just try to come from that point of view and say, you know what, like, let's just have fun. Like, stop being so serious about it. Let's just have fun. And there's a lot of cool things you can do. And that's, I feel like I have a little bit of a different approach than a lot of people who do teaching.
I would say
making.
Yeah. No, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, in a very good way. I feel like, okay, so as you know, I went to fashion school. So we learned draping. Right. And then I took another course and we learned it digitally in a flat form. And you kind of bridge the gap between the two, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you really you show like how to create pieces by hand, pattern pieces by hand, but also like draping on like a half size, you know, dress form. This kind of like, so I feel like you kind of connect both sides of that learning aspect and bring them together, because I feel like that was the part that I was struggling to make the connection, because I learned it by hand and draping, and then I learned it flat, but I was struggling with getting my physical 3D design idea into a flat 2D, you know. And even if you do it on paper by hand, there's that gap, and it's just can be a little challenging sometimes. But I feel like you have a good approach.
You're saying all the things that I hope to convey, so that makes me very happy.
Oh, good.
I'm in the same boat as Bethany, is that we had so many gaps, and I also find that like we learned all these different ways to pattern make, but everybody is different. So it was like, well, I did your course, I did a bunch of lessons, and I was like, okay, this is different, but maybe I like this better. Maybe I like to touch the stuff, you know what I mean? And create, because we did do it digitally, and it was just like, you know, it's just not as much like,
hard to see how it's going to flow and fit, right?
Right. Yeah. So to be able to like actually like see it as a 3D kind of thing. Yeah.
And I find that a lot of people who sew learn better visually. You know, they're visual
creatives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I do. If I have to read something, I start falling asleep.
Exactly. So Ashley just skips instructions.
Yeah,
I need pictures. That's it.
Focus on the pictures. Yeah, absolutely.
If there's no pictures in video, like, no, it's not.
If there's not a picture for every step, she just skips that step.
Yep.
I love it. Yep. Like, did you read it? Why are you stuck? This isn't hard. She's like, I didn't read it. There wasn't a picture.
I should put it on a shirt that says like, I don't read. Like, I don't. Okay. Read. So you better make those instructions amazing. I mean, I can read, but you know.
Well, but why? You don't have to. The way that I kind of, and that comes from, I think, my theater experience, is the way that I approach a project is a kind of a combination of flat pattern and draping. And I find that people who are wanting to learn pattern making or wanting to learn how to make their own patterns, they feel more drawn to draping. And I understand why, because you can visually see what's happening on the body. So you're like, that's going to be easier. And for some people it is, but there's still, once you've draped that on the form or on the body, you still have to know how to translate that onto paper if you want to replicate that again. So I always, and then same with digital. Like, I know that, you know, for a lot of people, if you want to be an indie pattern designer, or if you want to do things in the fashion world, you're going to have to know how to do digital pattern making. But, and to take that even further, the main thing that makes it different about the way I teach is a lot of pattern making classes, when you start by plotting points, taking measurements, plotting points, and making a sloper. And that is the one thing where I'm like, don't start there.
That's how it started with us. And I was like, oh my God, I gone cross-eyed, because I was like, what are we doing?
Yes.
This is weird. And I didn't even get an explanation of what a sloper was. So I'm literally just sitting there drawing lines on Illustrator. And I'm like,
you have no idea what you're doing.
But we didn't call it a sloper. It was a bodice block or a pant block. So it took me a while.
Block and sloper.
When they were the same.
Yeah.
You know, same term. And as you're talking about like draping, I always kind of wished I had learned it a different way than I did in fashion school than draping. But once going through the digital side of it, I'm like, I really appreciate how the draping. Yeah. I didn't appreciate it in the moment, but now I'm like, oh, man, I really do think I just want to like feel the fabric.
To see it.
And really, and then you watch those videos of people doing it, and I can sit there and watch those videos all day.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying. And actually,
even pattern drafting videos too. People really love to see that. But so my thing is like, let's not, and then a lot of people, what holds them back is math. You know, they're not good at math. I'm not good at math. So I'm not going to be good at pattern making. And I'm like, you don't have to be, it's like simple addition. We can figure that out.
But they don't say that. They just say it's math. And then like, is it calculus? Like, and you just,
it's because geometry.
And then it's like, oh no, it's just like fractions and stuff. It's like, oh. I've been doing this my whole sewing journey. So, like, okay, I got this.
It's easy stuff. So I just feel like when you have to when you don't know, you're like, what's a bodice block? What's a slipper? Like, what is it that I'm trying to make here?
Yeah.
And you're trying to wrap your brain around that. So I skip that part. And I'm like, here, have a slipper that we can play with and
give
learn
them
about.
That resource.
Right. So that's
so they don't get overwhelmed or frustrated right out the gate, because you do need them. But to be able to just go, here is our template that we're going to be working off of.
Yeah.
Now, once you master this, if you want to go and learn how to make your own and you've built some confidence in your pattern making, then you can go in and approach it and go, okay, maybe I do want to learn how to make my own slipper so I can make them to my own sizing chart and whatever, you know, but to not have to start with that.
Yeah. The amount of frustration and just like, I want to cry, because there's been points where like we plotted the wrong, like dot,
you get one thing off,
and then I got to go back and I'm like, no, like, it's not a good way to start a course. Just saying.
It
can be a little overwhelming for sure.
Yeah.
I noticed it. So I took some schooling, I took a certificate program to learn about costume design. So it was a mix of fashion classes and working in the theater and learning about theater and how that goes. And I realized that's where I first realized that I'm like, wow, pattern making is awesome, because I had just been kind of doing trial and error. And I was like, there's rules and techniques that make this go faster. Oh my gosh, this is wonderful. And then my teacher encouraged me to go to LA Trade Tech, which is a fashion school in LA, like a trade school, like a sister school to FITM, Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. But in this, especially in the second school, that was awesome. It was a pattern making class and it was like intense. It was like 4 hours of pattern making, 4 days a week. And so I had a little bit of a baseline, so I was kind of ahead of the curve, but I saw so many of my peers just like how you were saying, Ashley, just frustrated and like, I don't get it. And then the teacher was frustrated that the students weren't getting it. And they were like, I don't need this anyway. Like, I'm never gonna, and I'm like, but no, like, let's get to the cool, like, they were wanting to give up before they even saw how really cool it was. And that, so that really helped me when I started teaching. I was like, okay, we're not going to go down that road. Like, how can we? And then when I first started teaching, I taught in person classes. So I lived in Las Vegas for 11 years and worked on shows there. And that's where I started my business. And people were asking me about pattern making. That's where it kind of all started. And like, you should teach. And I'm like, me? I didn't even finish school. But I'm like, all right, we'll try it out. But, you know, I had my business during the day. I was working shows at night and figure everyone's kind of busy. So we would do it in a weekend. So when I structured the curriculum at first, I'm like, how can we do this so that by the end of this weekend, they don't have a sloper that they don't know what to do with? Because that's not helpful. Like, I want to give them skills that they're going to, at the end of this, be able to, because honestly, the reason I start by teaching the principles and teaching what can be done with pattern making is because that comes into play when you're doing fitting. You can do those, you can move a dart, you can add fullness on any pattern that exists. It doesn't have to be a sloper. So it really opens more doors. And so that's why I started that way, because I'm like, we only have this short amount of time. Yes, we can focus on making a sloper, but by the end of the weekend, you're going to be like, great, I have this sloper. It doesn't fit me. I don't know what to do with it. That was a waste of my time. So that's why I kind of started teaching it that way. And it's now it was just kind of a use of time, and it's kind of become my thing.
Well, I mean, okay. Would you agree? And maybe you don't, but this is just my experience. Cause you mentioned in school, you saw people getting frustrated and wanting to quit. Mm-hmm. I saw the same thing. I think for me, I was probably one of the only people in my class that had prior sewing experience.
Mm. Yes. And there was a lot of that.
I feel like having prior sewing experience and prior knowledge of how simple things, seams are created, mm-hmm. and how just sewing a basic shirt can give you so much knowledge to be able to understand how the finished product could be constructed helps you kind of reverse engineer how to break it down to pattern pieces and be able to make those pattern pieces you're drafting make sense, because you already have an understanding of how it's all going to come together. Mm-hmm. But if you have no experience with sewing, it can be really hard. And I saw so many people get frustrated. I think I was the only one in our finals class to finish the final in class, which was a button-down, self-drafted men's dress shirt. Mm-hmm. I was the only one that finished it.
Well, they come in like, I want to be in the fashion industry.
Yeah. I like this.
They don't, they're just exactly like, I put clothes on every day and I look super cute. Yeah. So I want to make them. And that's it.
And there are those that actually like refashion things. So they'll take things and they'll like refashion it, but they're still
upcycling,
not fully understanding how it got to what it was before. To begin with, how three yards of fabric became that dress, you know? So I feel like having sewing, so I say all of that, and maybe you agree, maybe you don't, but if you're a sewist already, even if it's not garment sewist, or you're just getting garment sewing, or just getting into that, maybe you've done bag making or quilting or something, crafting, but just to have sewing experience, you've got a leg up.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I think if you're going to go into pattern making, now I have students that are very, very, very much beginners, and they do okay, but they just need that's where the encouragement comes in, where they don't know what they don't know. So you can't make them feel bad for like,
no,
like, this is how you sew a dart. And you think that that's something, and that's something that I've learned through teaching, where I've been sewing since I was probably 7 years old. So I've been sewing a long time.
Me too.
And just kind of figuring stuff out. And you learn through trial and error, you know, if you start sewing that young. But you, when you start teaching, you don't even realize things that are just second nature to you. Like you're saying, like, well, you just put the seams together, put it on it. But if you've never done that before,
like, it's right sides together. And they're like, what?
Right. Yeah.
What's Why would you do that?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do.
It's not to say that they can't. I'm not saying that people who don't have sewing experience can't do fashion design or pattern drafting. It's just if we have a lot of it does make it harder. You've got a more of a learning curve, I guess, is a good way of putting it. But that I say all of that because we do have sewists that listen to us that have said, oh, I just don't know if I'm good enough to even dabble in that. And I'm like, you're already sewing. You're way ahead of the curve here. So just don't be scared. A lot of times the biggest hurdle is just getting people familiar with sewing in general. And if you're already doing the basics of sewing, you're ready. Like you just got to be ready to take that next step.
I usually start with, like, people will ask me, you know, I'm very a beginner sewer. Can I take this pattern making class? And you do, I say, can you sew a straight line? Do you know what a grain line is? Have you ever seen a pattern? You know, just terms that should be, you know, general, just so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But
I have students who sign up with me who barely know how to sew. And then I have students who have been sewing for 50 plus years. And it's a whole, because pattern making is a whole different thing, where having that knowledge of sewing is giving you a leg up, because you do have that in, and what you're talking about, and putting things together and understanding how to, that's the hardest thing when you're learning pattern making, is because that's, when you make your own pattern, you don't get instructions. So if you have an experience of working with patterns and working with instructions, like I never have instructions. I, even when I have instructions, I'm like, yeah, that's a dumb way of doing it. I'm going to do it my own way.
We tend to do that too. Yeah. I tend to do that too. I'm like, why would we put our sleeve on that way when it could be so much easier to do it this way? Like,
So, and there's that leg up, but I do find
it's called reading between the lines.
Yes. And we are rebels, right? By sewing in general, we're like, we don't want to go and buy something that already exists. We want to do it in our own fabric. We want to do it in our own way. So I think it lends itself to that, this craft in general. But I will say that the students that are newer who have, they're not unlearning things because when you work with commercial patterns, it's very different than working with self-drafted patterns or indie patterns. I think maybe in the indie patterns, like if you work more with indie patterns, that might be an easier step because one thing, most commercial patterns have 5/8 of an inch seam allowance. I always draft with 1/2 inch seam allowance. So when I'm like talking, they're like, but what's the difference? You know, it's a mental block of like, but wait, do I sew it at 5/8 if I add 1/2 inch seam allowance? I'm like, no, you sew it at 1/2 inch. So there's those kinds of things. So there's kind of pros and cons to both, but definitely there has to be at least a base knowledge of sewing, I think, before you go into pattern making. But you can go farther even if you are new to sewing, because you're not unlearning things that maybe don't work the same way when you're drafting your own patterns.
Very true. You know, I don't know if you did this in school. I still have this book. I need to climb up in the attic and get it out. But I have a binder of every type of seam there is. It's all made just with a woven fabric. But it's I have every seam and the name of the seam, and they're all in plastic sleeves. And I mean, it's just page after, there's darts and there's
French seams
and there's, but it was all in this huge binder and I could flip through it like a book. So if I knew like, oh, I need to add a dart, but it's been a while since I've done a dart, so how do I sew a dart? It's right there. And I can see one and I can take it out. Oh, that's how it's done. Put it back in and then I can do it. And I couldn't tell you how many times I've referenced that. It's in a bin up in my attic now. Yeah. I should pull it down and flip through it and show it because
show the people.
It's really cool. And I just thought it was so annoying we had to sew all of those. I was like, this is stupid. It did take a lot of time. It was like one whole quarter.
Funny. Cutting and cutting it up. And then you're like, but this you is going to be nothing all. And sit in a box. But
I was like, I'm never going to use these. And then I'm like, I use them all the time.
I have my bin is from a couture sewing class that I actually took when I moved to North Carolina at UNC Chapel Hill. A friend of mine had gone to that graduate program and he's like, you're moving to North Carolina. You have to go and take this class before the department had retired. And I'm like, okay, it's a 2-hour drive one way, but sure, let's do it. And it was great for me because coming out, I moved out here from Las Vegas, and in Las Vegas is where I learned a lot about stretch sewing. We did a lot of acrobats, circus. So I got real good at that, but I had gotten away from period stuff and tailoring and more woven kind of things. So it was actually a really good class for me to dive back in. So I just audited that class, but that's what we did is we have every kind of seam you can make, every kind of pocket you can make, every kind of zipper you can put in. We did cuffs and collars and interfacings and seam finishes and all of that. And it's a huge binder, but yeah, it's well, I say binder, it's a huge tub, like tub. I'm looking at it right now. It's over there, but I do reference it sometimes. And I reference it not only for myself, but when I have people who are working for me, or students, I can pull that out and
and it's nice to show them a physical sample,
right?
Without it being on a garment. So I really do need to go find that. I've thought about it several times over the last few months, and I'm like, I should go up there. Of course, it's like 1,000 degrees in the attic, but I'm gonna go fetch it. I don't even know where it's, I just know what bin, what the bin looks like. So I don't even know where it is, but maybe I'll go up there and we'll find it. And because it's just, it's just so cool.
I did the same thing when I was taking that pattern making class. I did the same thing with patterns. And that's kind of what, how we teach in both of my private community and PMA is we start with half scale patterns. And the reason for that is so that you're not using so much materials to do in a full scale body, because the principles are the same. Whether you do it in a little half size or quarter size or full size, you're doing the same steps. It works the same way. So we start by doing all of the learning, the practices in the half scale form, and then you can keep those and they're not going to be like so crazy, but it, it will, you know, I, but that's how I learned, initially too. And I probably have those somewhere as well. Kind of tucked away. I don't refer back.
Do you have a half scale dress form that you're like,
I do
using?
She's right there.
That's so cute.
Oh my gosh.
That's Susie.
The fact that they even make them is amazing.
I know.
You know, honestly, I, and it's funny, most of my students, when they start learning from me, you don't, I'm going to say this because it always comes up. You do not have to have a half scale dress form to practice patterns in half scale. Everybody wants one because they see Susie and they're like, but she's so cute and I want one too. And of course, it's nice to see your garments like on a 3D figure. But the point is to and then not only learn how to do the exercise, whatever we're doing, moving a dart, adding fullness, you know, changing a neckline, things like that, but also to learn how to sew from your own patterns. Again, reinforcing that and learning that at the very beginning, because you make a pattern and sometimes you learn like, oh, I forgot to add seam allowance here when you're putting it together. Cause you're like, why doesn't this go together? And that kind of thing. But you don't have to have the half scale dress form, but they are super handy. And I will tell you outside, I bought it when I started teaching. But besides that, when I have costume projects, cause in the costume world, they ask you to make things that don't exist anywhere.
Which is you can't just get a pattern for it.
Right. You can't just go.
You're creating one of a kind.
Yeah.
Individual.
And custom pieces. Say it's a testament, or, you know, pattern making and my knowledge of pattern making, my studying of pattern making is how I've been able to work in my career in the capacity that I have to have a business, because I know with my knowledge of pattern making, I can make anything, like any shape you can throw at me, any weird little thing that you want, but I got to figure it out. I got to, like, it's not going to be,
it's trial and error.
I've never made an upside down monkey costume, you know, for 18th century coat that's supposed to look like it blows in the wind. See, you know, like you, you have to.
Please tell me that's been a request.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, I say that because that's an actual project that I had for,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, we made five costumes for these giant monkeys. So tails, big hands, giant heads,
wow,
whole nine yards. And they wanted them to wear 18th century coats and vests and breeches. And that's another thing, making patterns for a statue that does not move, that you can't say like, put your arm in over here, is a completely different thing. And then to have them be upside down, had to be removable. And can we make it look like they're like natural blowing in the wind? Well, sure. Why not? So just getting the garment on the body, it took me probably 8 hours to do the fitting for all five of those.
Oh my goodness.
Because the left is not like the right, because he's got his leg up on one side and like where we were going to put the closures. Yeah, that was a fun project. We made two sets for cleaning. So you never
know. Gosh. For cleaning. Oh my God.
So the half scale, that's so funny. I mean, that particular project, I had to work with the actual statues. There was no way, but I work with another company called Insomniac. So they do big EDM festival, electronic dance music festivals.
Yeah.
And so they have a huge event in Las Vegas every year where they kick off like kind of a world tour, EDC, Electric Daisy Carnival. And they're one of my regular clients, and I've made like the main stage dancers. So they're sets of six and they are on huge stages. So they're usually like really out there, crazy costumes, like insect ladies that have to be sexy, but also, you know, be bigger than life, have these big wings, tufted couch cushion heart girls with big hearts with light up things. And so how do
but they still got to be able to dance and move.
But they still have to be able to dance. They're outside in the summer in Las Vegas. So they're dying of heat. And then this is one of several costumes that they're going to wear throughout the evening. So making it easy to come off and on and put that on and off again. So how do you make a tufted heart cushion lady look sexy? So that's where the half scale
if anybody form, can, it's you.
That's where the half scale form comes in. You know, you can, you can be like, this is what I'm thinking. Is this going to work? You know, it
translate.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it going to, is this going to look like a tufted heart cushion, or is this going to look like a flower dress that's 3D? And how am I going to put those pieces together? I think, people who really love pattern making, it's kind of like a puzzle. It's a challenge. Like people who enjoy that part of it. I used to call myself when I was living in Las Vegas, I became known as the quote unquote, figure it out girl. So like the upside down monkey, like people, they're like, oh, Trish will figure it out. You know, like I would get those calls. Like those were the calls that I would get. And because I enjoy trying that challenge, like that to me is fun. So that's why with teaching, I'm like, oh, you want to make a dress that fits you? Got you, girl. No worries. We can figure that out.
Yeah. I did it in my sleep with my hands tied behind my back.
But with the half scale, that's where, like, if you're wanting to be a designer and you're wanting to work out a new design, working it out in the half scale, like, is this going to look how I want it to look? Like, is this, yes, you can do a sketch, but figuring out the pattern, like how these pieces are going to go together, how much fullness, like ratio you want to have in a particular area. Then you're only using the materials for the half scale and you're not doing a big grand thing. And then once you figured it out, once you figured the puzzle out, then it's just a matter of taking that same method, that same step, and applying it to a sloper or a pattern that fits a real size person.
Yeah. Has there ever been a costume that you've been approached to make and you're like, whoa, like that almost seems impossible.
And do you have photos?
Because you did, but I mean, have there ever been any that made you pause and go, yeah, I don't even know if that's physically possible?
Well, yes, that does happen. It's my job as the pattern maker, and this is what I'm finding to be I feel like it's my mission to share the power of pattern making and make it accessible for everyone, because I feel like people think it's something that's unattainable for them. It's too hard. They've got to go to school forever. They're not good at math. So that's like my first message. My second message is to, that I feel like is my mission, is to highlight pattern makers, because the designers can dream up anything they want, but it's the pattern maker that has to make it reality. So it's my job as a pattern maker, when I'm given a design, to be like, okay, great. This is what you want. What do you love about this? Because here's what I'm seeing and here's what's possible.
Because they don't understand construction. They don't understand how much this is going to weigh on a body, you know, if it's a big costume. Like, are they going to be able to move in that? You know, those kind of things. So, like, do you feel like you just have to kind of bring them back down to reality?
You have to be able to have a conversation as well, right, with the people.
Every time that I receive a design, how it typically goes is in the costume world is I'm given a design, and the next thing is having that conversation with the designer. And some designers are going to know exactly, like, they've done construction, they've grown up that way. Yeah. So they're going to understand when I go, okay, this looks like it's a placket, a hidden placket with a zipper behind or whatever, you know, like technical. And they're going to know exactly what you're talking about. And they're like, yeah, that sounds right. Or that'll work. Or you're going to have designers who don't know how to sew anything. So you're like,
just make it happen.
What do you like about this? Like, what kind of, you know, do you like the fullness of it? Right. And then you have to have those, here's what's possible. Like, you never want to shoot the idea down, but you want to say, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what our options are. Here's what we can do.
Here's how we can achieve this look as close as possible to your original design while still making it functional for the person who's going to be wearing it and probably swinging from some chandelier somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, and that's a big part of it. That's the great thing about mannequins. They don't have to move. Make it as comfortable as possible. But yeah, that is part of being a pattern maker in that respect in the costume design world. Wow. But yeah, there are, when you first look at things and I have a designer, she's a very good friend of mine, but she doesn't know anything about sewing, very little about fitting. So when I come in, I'm kind of like the interpreter. I'm like trying to drag out from her, what is it that you really want? Like, what is it you're trying to embody? Like, what's this feeling? And then I kind of will do little mock-ups of things and be like, is this what we're going for? So that I can then translate that into a pattern that then we can pass on to the stitcher. So, so the pattern maker in a costume standpoint and in a fashion design, in every standpoint, honestly, is the pivotal position. Like, they're the person who make it happen. They make the design happen. And I feel like there's not hardly any, if any at all, recognition. Like, think about all the designers that you know. Dior, Chanel, Yves Saint Laurent, do you know their pattern makers? Like, those people are not creating
behind the scenes.
Yeah. And they're kind of not acknowledged for the power that they have.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm glad you bring this up because I watch these like fashion show competitions. And as someone who's gone through fashion school and knows how to sew and all of that, it amazes me how many of the people on these competition shows are just designers and not sewists. They don't know how to construct their design. So when it's just them on this show, they may have a great concept, but they have no idea how to bring it to fruition. And it's,
and they only have 8 hours.
I'm impressed for them. I'm like, why would you even volunteer to be on this show if you can't? You know what you signed
next,
up for.
Next in fashion, kind
of. I'm like, how do you think it comes together? Like, you know, and it, but it kind of frustrates me because I feel like as a fashion designer, you need to know how to sew. You need to know. You don't have to do it every day, but you need to have
that's understanding.
It helps. You have to be able to put in a zipper and attach a collar and do just some basics. But that always kind of frustrated me because people are like, oh, you should be on one of those shows. It's like, absolutely not.
Because say that to me too. But here's the thing is I don't consider my mom still calls me a costume designer. And I'm like, I'm not a costume designer, but it's very hard to explain. Because people don't know about this position. They don't know it even exists. They're like, but the designer does everything. And it's like, they really don't. I struggle with design. Like, I can design things for myself that I like, you know, but I would struggle with that design piece. So I like people coming to me with the idea. And then that's my part of it. So I think that it's just different. And I don't think as a designer, to be a successful designer, you have to know all the ins and outs of how things go.
No, but if you're going to go on one of those shows and you want to win, you got to be able to.
Funny enough, I did. Katie Cortman was on season 19 of Project Runway, and I coached her before she went on Project Runway.
Really?
Yeah,
that's awesome. So
we did some private coaching because she's an artist. She came from artists and painting.
Her
big thing. I don't know if you know her, but she's all about bold colors and color. What do you call it? Coordination. That's not the right word, but, bringing colors together and stuff like that. And she knows design, but she wasn't very confident in her pattern making. And the thing is, people tell me that all the time, or especially when I was in Las Vegas and making costumes, and I was like, are you kidding? That's my life. Like, to crank these crazy things out in 3 days or 2 days, you know, I have no desire to go on a show like this. I'm already living.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It, and But in that, you know, and when I create costumes and when we have to do stuff like that, that's the thing with theater and the theater industry, everything's due yesterday. So it's like, mm-hmm. not only does it have to fit perfectly, look exactly how the designer wants it to look, but it has to be functional and hold up to the everything mm-hmm. that they have to do. And costumes go through much more stress than everyday mm-hmm. clothes. Because think about mm-hmm. how often you wear the shirts that you're wearing today. Like, these costumes yeah. are worn every single day, laundered every single night, and sometimes twice mm-hmm. a day. So they're put under a lot of strain and stress. Mm-hmm. But being in that environment, you learn how to make things adjustable, alterable. That's the other thing in costuming, mm-hmm. like those EDC costumes that I'm talking about. I make them for 6 girls. I get very minimal information on their measurements. And those 6 girls will be the ones in Las Vegas. And then they'll take those costumes to Florida and they'll have 6 different girls that are going to wear those. So they need to be somewhat adjustable.
So drawstrings and elastics and all kinds
yeah.
of.
Yeah, yeah. Worked into that kind of. And we right. kind of have size ranges. So it's not as, but that happens right, in theater right. too. You know, if you have a show that's lasting for 15 years, like we do in Las Vegas, that mm-hmm. costume might have 3-4 different wearers during the life. And so you have to make things adjustable. And that's what I think when I watch the fashion shows, I'm like, why did you not add extra seam allowance so that you could fit that on the girl and not be like, oh my God, it doesn't fit. I'm like, that's your
right,
fault.
Right. Like, just put like even an inch of seam allowance just in case.
Yes.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because when I watch those shows, sometimes I get frustrated with watching the construction part of it come out, and I'm watching them sew and I'm just like,
oh my gosh, please stop.
Or their thread breaks on a serger and they're like, anybody know how to thread this?
Thread, I'm like, yeah.
Oh my gosh, stop it. Stop it.
They walk in and the machine is threaded, though. Like, they, everything, state-of-the-art sewing studio, and everything is done for yeah. them. So,
yeah. Well, and so, and then there's some shows where they just have to get all the pieces put together and then put in a bag. And then the seamstresses sew them mm-hmm. up overnight, and they come back and they're like, oh, this is perfect. And I'm like, but I want to see that part.
Like, who does that?
There's one. I can't remember. But, you know, it's just, for me, I want to showcase, or I want to see the full
construction
from start to finish. And yeah. some shows do that, but they're being done by the competitors. And I'm just like, please, please don't show that. That's wrong. And so, yeah. I don't know. I do enjoy seeing the runway and the final yeah. results. And I'm like, oh, somehow they pulled that off. But I also appreciate when the judges will like take a closer look and they mm-hmm. zoom in with the camera, and I'm like,
mm-hmm. I look at the seams.
They did not press their seams, and it shows, and there's a pucker, and like, you see all those things. And, you know, it just, I don't know. I enjoy seeing it all. It just wouldn't, I would be a nervous wreck to go on one of those shows.
Well,
because I'm such a perfectionist.
Exactly. Even if you do have strong sewing skills and design skills, and you're able to, that's mm-hmm. a tough, like, I remember chatting with Judy after. It's just the pressure to create at that level for mm-hmm. as long as you stay in the competition. That's the thing that's added on.
And the curveballs they throw at you yeah. and the crazy fabrics and everything. Yeah. And
but they made them make like a whole collection too at the end, and I'm like,
that would be my dream. So when I was in fashion school, I had to make a 3 or 5 piece collection for my final of the year.
They all have to be like cohesive and like kind of go together too.
Yep, and they were mm-hmm. all fit to certain models, and I mean, it was a whole thing, but it literally was like the highlight of my life. Peaked in that moment, and it's just been, no, I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh.
I don't believe it.
I mean, I would give anything to do something like that again. I just wouldn't mm-hmm. want to do it on public national television.
Right. Yeah. That's
you can make a collection for your Instagram any day.
There you go. I'll do a wardrobe.
Y'all gonna come model for me? We'll put a runway up in my front yard.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sure.
I mean, but seriously, I love going to fashion shows. It's such a vibe, the energy, the creativity. I went to a fashion show earlier this year at Belmont, which is a college here, and they have a really good design fashion design program. And oh my gosh, well, the company I worked for was one of the sponsors, so we got to go and sit really close. And I mean, it just it's so exciting.
Thought if I had, you know, all the money in the world, I would. I mean, I think that goes back to why we all sew, right? Like, I like to wear things that aren't normal, that people don't have. Like, I drool over those fashion shows. And it's like, I would just wear that kind of stuff, like, to the grocery store.
Every day.
You know, like, just, that's what I love about it, is that avant-garde fashion. And I think that's, I mean, I've always loved costumes. Like, my first ever pattern that I attempted was, like, around 7 or 8 when I wanted to make a dress for Halloween. And I didn't know what I was doing pattern making. I just wanted, I tell the story in one of my classes, but it's like, I wanted to be half dead and half alive. And so have like a cut up side that was all blood. Like Halloween was big in my house. So I was like, my mom's not going to let me cut up one of my dresses. I guess I'll have to make one, you know, one, and pulled out a sheet and my little doll. And I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. I had no idea what I was doing and didn't know that that was pattern making. But, I forget where I was.
That's amazing. You're 8 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, that's crazy. I'm like, I was always,
yeah,
I guess some people kind of resourcefully, like taking like crafty, you know, when you're like,
how I call it handy.
Correct. How could we create that shape? You know, I would do it with like, I guess when you're a kid and, I know Bethany, you have children. I don't know if you have children, Ashley, but, you have two. I had a crafting book when I was a kid. So, you know, rainy days and I loved that thing. I'm like, what are we going to do? You know, when you're bored, like old toilet paper rolls, like making soap sculptures. Like that was, I was that kid. It was like, where's the art tent at like camp? You know, I always just like to create things. So I was like, well, I could make a, you know, it was another thing that I'm like, why not? Yeah. I could make a dress. So costumes.
I need a toilet bowl flower over there so I can make a dress. That's easy.
When you're a kid, you don't know that you're not supposed, that there's rules and you're not supposed to do. And that's why I think that, like, I want to invite some of that into our adult lives too. Like, let's just have fun with this. You know,
doesn't have to be perfect.
Doesn't have to be serious. But that's, you know, where it all started for me as far as sewing, and Halloween was always a big thing with my family and in my house. So, and I've seen your post lately, Bethany, with gearing up for fall. That's all me. Like, I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. So costumes and then avant-garde fashion. Like, I'm just all about it. I think it's super fun. And I like fashion shows too with that, because then you're going to see, you know, unique, different details and you get inspired by that stuff.
I know some people see like some of this fashion and they're like, who would ever wear that? It's like, that's not the point.
Right.
It's not the point. It's art.
Yes. Exactly. You know, like,
I look at some of these paintings, because I originally went to school for fine art as a painter and a sculptor, and then that turned into fashion design. But I was like, who, I like it.
Yeah.
The person who created it liked it. Doesn't mean you have to like it, but you know, you look at different types of art and you're like, well, that may not be my interpretation of what I would call art, but that's somebody's art. But same with fashion. Some of this stuff's pretty off the wall and crazy. I'll admit, but it's still someone's expression of their mind, right? Their creative mind. And so I'm not, I mean, it may be wild and it may be, but I look at it and I share it because I think it's inspiring in some sort of way. It makes you think outside the box. Like,
absolutely.
I sent a reel that I saw the other day to Amy. She is the owner of Dibby Club Patterns, but she is also an attorney by day. So, and a corporate attorney. And so I sent her this video. I don't know if you've seen it circling, but it's someone wearing a business suit, like a skirt and a suit jacket going down the runway, but the whole suit jacket comes up into a shark head and there's a fin on the back. And I was like, if this isn't the perfect outfit for an attorney, and the briefcase had money coming out of it. And
it was
a
loan shark.
It was like,
it was a loan shark.
It was hilarious. And I was like,
my nose goes when I see things like that. I'm like, what's the inner structure look like? Like, how did they make that happen?
Yeah, I'm like, it
literally looked like jewels, but in suiting material. So and cool. I was like, this is amazing. I thought it was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
It was really nice, but I feel like you probably couldn't breathe in there. But I'm sure. I mean, Trish, what would be in there? Could you put like a fan in there or something? Like what?
Fan, ice vest or a thing? That's what they do for
ice vest. Yeah,
you know, character costumes like Sesame Street and Disney costumes and things like that.
You know, we had
Emma.
Actually, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She's done costumes for movies, and she did Chewbacca, and she was telling us about like these pipes, like these hoses that run through the costume, and they put cold water through them to cool them down in between, you know, sets and stuff, so that they can cool down because it's too much work to take it completely off. Just to have to put it back on. So they'll do that to help them cool down. In addition to fans,
liquid
but they can't.
Cooling,
but it's just kind of different things like that. That I'm like, oh, and then so not only are you having to make this costume, but now you're having to make it fit somebody, but also incorporate some sort of cooling system of some sort. And
I don't know, that's just crazy. That helped me in my career too, because I started working in theater, you know, working backstage, doing the quick changes, not necessarily making the costumes yet, but you hear from the performers like, oh, why is this like this? Or having to,
and this boning's digging into my ribs every time I like twirl upside down.
And like the quick changes that they have to do, you know, backstage and what makes it easier on the people helping them and what makes it easier for laundry every night. So I have that background. It's the same as like you're saying, having a designer who doesn't know how to construct things. It's like having that background and growing up through that. When I'm working on a costume and I'm making a pattern, it's like I'm trying to think of all the people that are going to interact with this costume and how can we make it work for everyone. So that, you know, it's easy going for everybody, but that's not always easy to do. And sometimes you got to make compromises, but it's definitely, there's a lot more that goes into costumes than, but that's kind of the fun. Again, it's the fun challenge of it, I think.
What would you say has been your most favorite costume you've made?
Oh, that's so hard.
That's a trick question. Even if you can narrow it down to like top three. But you know,
I really liked those insect costumes that we made for EDC. I like those are kind of, and they always hit me. So we have to make six of them, typically for that client, and they give me like a month to make these six outrageous, insane costumes. So it's always like, oh, I'm gonna do it, and then banging it out. But those were pretty cool because I feel like they were sexy and they had these like cool headpieces that we made and like really cool wings.
We're going to need a photo of these.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got photos. I've got them and they're on my Instagrams. Yeah. So that one, that was really fun. I think the monkey one was probably the most challenging. So I like that just because we were like, we did it. We figured it out. But yeah, there's lots of fun costumes.
So personal makes that you've made for yourself, but would you say are like some of your favorite?
Besides
your half dead, half alive Halloween costume, right.
Which I hand sewed, by the way, and it fell apart like 3 days later because I didn't know what I was doing, and I cut half of it up. You know, honestly, before so when I started. So I started teaching in-person classes when I was in Las Vegas teaching pattern making. And then around 2019, when I moved out to North Carolina in 2016. So around 2018, 2019, I put one of my classes online. I was against social media at all because I was like, I don't have time for that. And then my class
sat
there.
You now.
Nobody signed up for it. Nobody knew it existed. And I'm like, I know people want to learn pattern making. So then I had to like learn about online marketing. And I'm like, I guess I got to play social media. And now I'm every day on social media. It's part of my job, part of my life. But
it really is.
Then in 2020, with COVID, March of 2020, I had gigs. We were about to go, we were sending people to Reno. We were about to go to Vegas to open a couple other shows. I was about to open a show locally here. We were doing an opera, King and I. Everything stopped overnight.
Yeah.
It's gone. I had Blue Man costumes I had just shipped to England. I had to, like, you know, hey, are you going to pay me for those things? And they're like, we're not sure where the, you know, my whole business disappeared. Gone.
Whoa.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, well, this online class thing, got to figure it out and make sure it works.
Okay.
And that's when I really doubled down, and because that's all I had. But that was true for everyone in the entertainment industry. Pretty not pretty much every single person I had ever worked with was out of work. For about year to 2 years for most people.
Wow.
So when I was working full time with my business and in costuming, I didn't have time to make myself things. Before I started my own business, I would do Halloween costumes because that would be like my one time a year I would make myself something. So I would, and I would test out different materials and make something fun for myself because there was no pressure. So it wasn't really until 2020 that I started sewing for myself again. So that's kind of new to me, again, and it's kind of made me fall in love with sewing again. Cause I'm like, ooh, I get to do whatever I want. Like, I don't have to be dictated to what materials I have to work with, how it has to look. So it's kind of a new thing to me again, to get to use my skills for whatever I want. And it's still
for personal kind of use,
a mindset thing that I'm trying to, how do I fit it in and what do I want to make? And things like that. But everything I'm
finding new ways to express your creativity on your own body, own style.
Exactly. So, everything that you see here is made for me by me, what I'm wearing. And, so it, just the fact that I'm sewing for myself again is really fun. I would say one of the latest things that was just kind of a passion project, this raincoat I made.
I was gonna say, I've seen that clear raincoat and it's fabulious.
Yeah. And it's all bias bound theme. That was on a whim.
you wore that to Frocktails in Miami, and you had a matching dress underneath that matched the bias tape in that. And I was like, that's fabulous.
Yeah. So the dress was planned because that's actually a Pattern Making Academy design. And then I was going to Frocktails. I was a sponsor for Salfora Frocktails. Actually, Diana and Joe, they are students of mine and have been for years. And so I was super proud of them for them throwing that event. And then I was a sponsor for them. And so I made that dress. And then I was like, you know, this would be a great way for me to make a dress from PMA. And then we could do like a class on it afterwards. Mm-hmm. So we did the draft the look class afterwards on that dress that I wore. And so that dress had to be done. I had to take pictures. I was promoting that class like during Frocktails. But then I was like, somebody mentioned to me in, her name is Nina. She mentioned to me in my Instagram DMs, and she's like, you know, it rains here a lot in Florida. Like, you might need a raincoat. And I'm like, I don't have a raincoat that I want to wear with my dress. But I was like, but maybe I need to, you know, and it was kind of like this totally passion project out of the blue that I just decided to make.
And did then it rain?
It did not.
Only because you made the raincoat.
Exactly, right? But everyone loved the raincoat. It was a huge hit. I won like most unique outfit. Like, I won some patterns from Sew by Seven for the raincoat, and it got a lot of attention.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then the bathing
suit super cool
underneath it was something else that I kind of just made. So it's nice to be able to use my professional skills for like, I just want to make this, but it's kind of still new to me. So just the fact that I get to make myself things are really fun. I don't know.
Well, that's a great thing about like your pattern school is that like, you know, you don't have to go into pattern drafting to make a pattern company, but if you just want to make patterns for yourself and just be like, I want to make clothes for myself. That
or just
is...
learn an understanding of how they're constructed. So you can, make it easier for you to grade or make adjustments that don't fit you perfectly. Yeah,
I know. there's a store near me, and I know my size in that store, but lately I think they changed their sizing chart because I buy the same size and I brought it home and I'm swimming in it. So do I take it back and get a smaller size? That probably won't fit me. So I'm like, well, now I can, you know, alter it, grade it, that's or whatever. Great. I have these skills. But I do have a question about you starting your businesses. I'm just curious as to how you're like, I'm going to go to Las Vegas and start a business. And then that you just like do it. Like, how do you just do it? Like,
It didn't really go like that, but
I would love to know. You're just like, hey guys, I'm here. And I started a business. And like, oh yeah.
I snuck backstage. Surprise.
I'm here now, guys.
So I started.
Is it all in who you know? Or did you like
in the costume industry and in the entertainment industry, it is very much, and that was a big change for me when I went to the online space. It's very much networking, who you know, and building a reputation. So I was on tour for 2 years. So I left school because I got offered a tour. I was on tour with a Broadway show called with the Full Monty, two different tour legs. And then I landed in Las Vegas to open a show. It was a Cirque du Soleil style show in the water. But it wasn't Cirque du Soleil. It was a director from Cirque du Soleil who had branched off and started his own company. So that's what brought me to Las Vegas. And I worked on that show. We opened that show and I worked on that show for about 5 years. Now in entertainment, typically it's 9 month contracts, a year if you're lucky. Okay. Outside of Las Vegas and New York and LA, like touring shows last for years and years. But, you know, summer stock, you kind of go for 3 months, community theaters, like they're short contracts. So it's a very, unstable.
Yeah. So kind of stressful.
Always changing.
You're always looking for the next gig, doing the next thing. But it's fun and it's exciting. So when I landed in Las Vegas and we're opening this big show and year three, I'm like, God, this is the longest job I've ever had. Like, it's cool. And I'm learning lots of stuff. But, you know, what's next? I started thinking what's next. So I was interviewing lots of different, because that's the great thing about Las Vegas is there's so many shows there on the strip that you can go and, you know, a lot of people move around from show to show. So I was interviewing at different shows and nothing was really clicking. Nobody was hiring me. But my freelance, I was doing a lot of freelance for costumes, for performers who wanted to do their own thing outside of the show. So they're like, I need, you know, whatever, they're building their own shows outside. So I was doing a lot of that. And I said to myself one day, I was like, God, I cannot get a job, but my freelance is going crazy. And then I was like, huh, maybe I should do that full time.
Maybe that's my job.
Yeah. So I kind of, that's where that idea came from. And I gave myself, you know, a stipulation. I said, because I knew I would be building clients, like I didn't have enough clients to support me fully. But I said, if I could get another part-time job, like a on-call dresser or something at a different show, then I would take the leap. So I started reaching out to friends of mine, networking, and saying, hey, who do you know who might need like an on-call dresser? And I knew one of the good friends of mine that I had worked with in California, her best friend was the head of wardrobe on Lion King. So I was like, hey, you know, is Joel looking for anybody? And she's like, yeah, give him a call. So I gave him a call. I met with him and he's like, yeah, sure. We can get you started. I'm like, all right. I got that there job. So wow. I went for it. And
the stars were aligning.
It was rough. The first year was rough. And you know, thank goodness for Lion King. I ended up, they had actually, I think, like 15 dresser tracks, and then they had a laundry position and they had a stitcher position. So I knew like 13 of the 15 tracks. They could call me in. And then a friend of mine actually became department head. He was offered the position to be department head of wardrobe for Jersey Boys. And so he's like, hey, I want you to be my assistant. And I'm like, how am I going to do that? Like have a full time, you know, trying to grow my business. We were working on like, my mom at that same year I left my job. She retired and then decided she wanted to start a grant writing company. So she was like trying to help me write a grant. And so I was trying to come up with like a whole school to help underprivileged kids, which really wasn't like, I was like, yes, I would like to share and people have expressed interest in learning from me, but that mm-hmm. wasn't my main focus. I wanted to like make costumes. So we were going through that whole process. I had like developed a curriculum and all of that, but it really wasn't clicking there. And mm-hmm. so I was like, how am I going to open a whole school, have my own business and work full time at Jersey Boys? He's like, do you really want to open a whole school? And I'm like, not really. And he's like, so don't do that. Yeah. He's like, you can still grow your business while we work at Jersey Boys. So that's what I did. I was like, Mom, I don't really think the grant thing's for me. But that's kind of where the in-person classes started. Cause I was like, I've already figured out kind of the layout of how I would teach. And maybe that will also help supplement. And then I worked at Jersey Boys. So I worked at Jersey Boys full time for the next 5 years while I built up my clientele. And every time I would do like a big project, I would buy a new machine or I'd buy a new dress form mm-hmm, and reinvest mm-hmm. it in the business. And I was living off mm-hmm. of Jersey Boys money kind of to pay the bills. Nice, yeah. And my whole goal with having my own business, I love Las Vegas for the opportunities it has given me and the food and the other things. But I was like, I do not want to live in Las Vegas for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I miss waiting for that. What do you mean?
So it was never my goal to live there forever. And I thought 2 years tops. And then 11 years later, we were still there. I'm like,
oh wow. Yeah.
So it was always my goal to, with my business, to be able to work wherever
yeah.
I wanted.
That'd be nice.
So,
yeah.
My man is from out here in North Carolina. And so he found the perfect job. And I got to a point where I was like, this needs to happen. I need to move somewhere with mm-hmm. trees. Like I can't stand being, I'm so right? busy and working so
Get
hard.
Get out of the desert.
Yeah. And it's so
Did rough you meet him in Vegas?
We met on that first show that I okay. opened. Yeah. Yeah. That's where we
so
met.
So is he in that industry as well?
He was. Up until October of last year, he left the industry okay. and now he works for a door manufacturing plant out here. He does Very automation. Cool. So all of the moving lifts and people flying. All of that
wow.
stuff. So that's
so
his
cool.
background. So now he does automation so cool. for door building.
It's all engineering, right?
Yeah, exactly. He loves it because, you know, now it's not long hours, it's not late nights, it's not weekends,
right,
you know, it's a 9 to 5, it's actually 7 to 4, and you know, and he's overtime if he works longer. But that was the first non-theater job he had for like 26 years. So mm-hmm, when I wow. moved out here was when I was like, I don't know what's going to happen, but hopefully I can still service my clients, because a lot of my clients weren't even in Las Vegas. Like I had built up oh. some clients in Las Vegas, but that by then I was like starting to do stuff for Blue Man and starting to get some bigger clients. And so I was like, what does it matter if I'm sewing in Las Vegas or if I'm sewing in North Carolina? So,
mm-hmm.
no.
Do you travel a lot?
I did, before COVID, what my job kind of turned into was I would go and do tour installs. So we would maybe build a couple of costumes or pieces for a particular show. We were working with a company called The Works, where we did Circus 1903 and they did The Illusionist, was another big shows up there. So magic and circus. And, so I would go and help them make sure the costumes that they received fit the actors and were ready to like kick off the show. It's a mm-hmm. very intense week to 3 week process, because those are the first time everybody's coming together and it's like got to make it yeah. happen really quick. So I was doing that a lot. And then actually January of 2020, that company got bought by Cirque du Soleil, and Blue Man got bought by Cirque du Soleil like 2 or 3 years oh. before that. So all of a sudden, all of my clients were so like, and then they went bankrupt in 2020, but we don't have to talk for that.
oh no.
So then,
awkward.
And then yeah. Which made it, love it yeah, all. 2020 even more fun. But mm-hmm. yeah, so that's kind of how that business came about. And then the teaching, like I said, was kind of a side thing that I did, on the weekends, people. And then when I taught my first, through my whole grant writing thing with my mom, she had connections with the school district. because that's her background. And so there was the fashion school, or the fashion teachers in Las Vegas, Clark County. They connected with me and they were like, oh, wow, like, can you come and teach our teachers pattern making? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And so I taught that first class. I think we had 22 people. Half of them were teachers and I had never taught before.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, go through it. And then the end of that class, they were just, oh my God, please develop more classes. Like because they get a certain amount of education fund money too.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is way more applicable to what we can share with our students. Like, it's not just a PowerPoint presentation. So they were like, any classes that you create, we will take. So I was like, okay.
Validating for you to get that feedback.
So that was really great. And then, but I'll tell you, so when everything went away in 2020 and I was like, okay, this has to work, you know, I have to live off of this and really had a lot to learn. And marketing was way different than networking and building a reputation. So I was like, I dove into studying with that. I hired a coach. I just really had to learn the whole scope of everything. And I wasn't marketing to theater professionals who wanted to learn skills to move up in that avenue because they all didn't have jobs. So I kind of that's when I discovered the online sewing community, fashion bloggers, and Mimi G. And I was like, oh, wow, like this whole scope that I didn't even know existed. But it was really cool. And then when I started teaching and working with students in that environment, people tell me, and still to this day, like, if not daily, like weekly, how I've changed their lives. They're like, oh my God, I can make something that fits me. I helped a woman.
Yeah.
She's now become one of my really good friends. She lives in Turkey. She signed up for my class and she's like, hey, Trish, do you think I could make my own wedding dress? Cause she was a COVID bride. And I'm like, she was very new to sewing. And I'm like, well, one of the prizes, like her first buyer prize was to have a fitting with me to fit her sloper. So she had a fitted sloper. And I was like, if you stick to very basic shapes of kind of what you're learning in pattern making 101, we can make it happen. But it was 3 weeks from when we started to her wedding day. And she did it. She drafted and made her own wedding dress. And it's like life-changing. I got to Zoom, go to the wedding and it's just, so that kind of reward from teaching.
Yeah.
You can't put a dollar amount on that.
Right. So
the value there is.
Even when costume stuff started coming back, I was like, I feel more like this is where I need to be.
It's okay to pivot and shift focus in your career. You're still being creative. You're still, you know, have made your mark in a lot of ways, but it's okay to pivot. And I feel like people forget that it's okay. Like, I haven't been working for a sewing company my entire career. I spent 10 plus years in another industry, completely separate from creative at all. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay to change, you know, and shift gears and shift focus. And I love that you're still contributing and, you know, being creative and everything, but it's like a giving back in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And empowering and like other people with that skill set.
Absolutely. And that's where I feel like I notice that I teach it in a different way and people tell me like that I'm approachable, that it finally makes sense to them. I had these books for forever and I didn't know how to use them. So I just feel like that's what I need to be doing. When my costume clients started coming back though, I'm like, I tried that. That was last year. I was like, how much can I do or not do or what, you know, it was figuring it out. And then because so many people that I knew were out of work for so long, and I had worked so hard to build up these clients and build up these accounts and learn what their needs are and know their patterns and know their process. So I started offering, you know, friends of mine who had lost their jobs during COVID, like, hey, would you like to sew these things? Like, I've got the connection. I've got the clients. I know how to do everything. And so that's kind of, I didn't want to just give that up or be like, sorry, clients, not doing that anymore. You know? So it's a way for me also, it's a very tough industry and people aren't treated very well, you know, in that side. So it gives me an opportunity to provide work for people, and pass that along and still service my clients. But then hopefully my goal is to, you know, create a better working environment that we can still have fun and make costumes and not be like, it gets pretty intense during certain times of the year. I want to try to, my goal with the schooling was, I hope when costume stuff comes back, I won't have to take everything. And that was my whole point with starting it in the first place. I thought I would slowly build it and like transition. Mm-hmm. And then it became, well, no, this is everything. So that's why I kind of keep it all going, and it's fun for me creatively. So, and then I have a big goal, actually. I wanted to, so what I was saying about highlighting pattern make. So the big eye in the pie dream one day, is to have a pattern convention, pattern con, and highlight pattern makers and bring pattern making skills all together. Cause there's fashion pattern makers, there's movie pattern makers, there's theater pattern makers, there's historical pattern makers, there's cosplay pattern makers.
Yeah.
There's 3D pattern makers, there's digital pattern makers. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many different skills. And then to also highlight and celebrate the power of that position. Cause I feel like it's not celebrated right now.
It's so that's not
kind of a big goal that I'm going towards as well.
Yeah. We will be watching for that.
Yeah,
waiting for our invitation.
Well, I was thinking of Bethany because you just did that retreat, and I'm thinking, like I'm doing a lot of research and collecting. Like I'm a person, I don't, if I talk about something or if I say I'm going to do something, it's pretty likely that I'm going to do it.
Oh yeah.
So I'm working.
You are very much alike in that.
Yeah, I'm working towards that, and I'm thinking that it would probably be the first step. That's a huge, daunting task, you know, year long prep, and probably a board of people, and we're just at the beginning stages. But I think that first step would maybe be like a retreat or maybe a virtual conference of some sort.
Building that like inner circle of people that you admire. Right. Mm-hmm. And getting that collective time together in an intimate setting, like a retreat.
Yeah.
That's going to be an opportunity for you to connect with them and say, hey, this is what I want to do. And there's a reason you all were invited to this. You know, I want you to be, are you on board? Let's collectively make this amazing. Cause you can't do it by yourself. I mean, you're one person to pull off something big like that. And you got to start small to get there, but you got to start with the right people in your circle.
For sure.
That you would want to feature in a setting like that. Mm-hmm. And you would want to have, you know, those are the people that are going to be your biggest cheerleaders for stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So you're on the right track. You're on the right track. Hey, building that community in that way. Well, I have a question for you.
Sure.
So if someone, we talked about your pattern making, so, you know, classes and courses and everything. Mm-hmm. If someone wanted to get started with that, if one of our listeners wanted to get started with that, like what would be the best advice for them to like get started? Should they start?
Sure.
Is there like I think you have a free masterclass, right?
I do.
Just to get their, dip their toes in the water and make sure, is this really something I want to do?
Yeah. So that's where I always kind of direct people to the free masterclass because it kind of gives an introduction of where my skills come from and about my different approach to teaching pattern making. And we do move a dart and we start with the step and you can kind of see, and it's all free. So that's definitely where I would start. And then we have Pattern Making Academy, which is the academy with Mimi G, where I'm the lead instructor. It's very affordable. It's $19.97 a month. And we start with the basics. And such a great, it's all doing your own pace. It's all pre-recorded. So you can go as fast or slow through the curriculum as that you would like. And we start with my foundations, I call it, the three principles that I feel like you really need to know those three pretty well, so that you know how to start using them in different designs. So we start with those three foundations and they're fun. That's where we're making little Susie clothes and, you know, it's exercises to really learn those skills, but in a fun way. And then after that, we go into fitting, your sloper to yourself. So we have a little fitting course. And then the cool thing about, PMA is Mimi picks all of the designs that we're going to teach. So how that works after you've done the foundations is every month you get a new design. So we have a new design and then there's either a hack. So something that you change on the pattern that turns that design into a different design, or it'll be like a fitting adjustment that would pertain to something like that. And then the third one is going back to, you don't get sewing instructions with patterns that you make yourself. So she does an order of construction class. So it's a really beginning to end for this design. And of course we build on those designs as you go through the program. And we're always releasing new designs and building up the curriculum. So that's a really great way to get started. Plus Mimi G just had her new book come out, which is Make It Yours by Mimi G. Yeah.
I got
and,
it.
And I helped it's great. Her a lot with that. Yeah. It's really wonderful. I just love the whole idea of the book. That's a great way. Pattern hacking, you know, that's a term I didn't even honestly know what that was until I came into the online space, but I'm like, yeah, that's pattern. You know, that's like somebody said, one of our followers said, I think it's Dejanay. She said, pattern hacking is like the gateway to pattern making. And I'm like, that's right. Like get you into it. Yep. That's a great place to start, you know, with that book. And, Mimi's, she gives you 7 base patterns. So basically 7 slopers, 7 blocks. And then the book takes you, it has great reference on fabric and on, how to sew different elements of each pattern and whatnot. And then we go into the hacking. So you can turn those 7 patterns into, I think it's 18 different patterns. And I helped her a lot when she was creating that.
It's amazing. You can create a whole wardrobe and they can all look different every time you make it and hack it a different way based off 7 staple items that you would probably want in your closet. The photos alone in that book, though, are worth getting the book.
Absolutely.
I just enjoy flipping through them. She's so stylish, but this, her choice of color and fabrics and everything, I was just like, this is so cool.
I'm a picture book kind of girl.
Yeah. And then it's fun.
She takes all those designs and styles them in different ways. So yeah, I think there's 109 looks that she does with 7 patterns, you know, is that where it starts. So that's a really
And she
great
also
way
starts with the beginning of like basic sewing terminology and pattern terminology. And like you said, the construction, like how to insert a zipper, how to do a pocket, how to add a collar, like some of the basic things so that as you decide, oh, I want to change up the neckline or I want to, you know, do this or that. When you go through the hacking process, you're like, and then the instructions are right there. The instructions are in the book. Like it's, when I got the book, I wasn't expecting all of that, plus the pocket in the back with all the paper pattern, like already printed off. So I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So like, that it's book
worth
the
every
free,
penny.
Free class, you know, to get to kind of dip your toe in. And then Pattern Making Academy, I would say, is a great place. And Pattern Making Academy is always open to register, to jump in. And if you already have some pattern knowledge, like you can kind of skip ahead some of the, like you don't have to do every exercise. If you do have some knowledge already, you can kind of go at your own pace, like I mentioned. And then my private community, so the Pattern Place, is only open a couple times a year, 2 times a year. So we keep it pretty intimate. And in that community, I really call it more of a community. I have a whole resource library of basically every class I've ever taught. And they have that to access. And they start with Pattern Making 101, which was the first class that I started teaching. And it's very similar to the foundations that I've done with Pattern Making Academy. It's just, I've filmed it. It's different. And then after that, it's kind of more of a choose your own adventure. So if you're somebody who's like, I don't want to design from beginning to end, I want to make this exact thing, then that's where it's more one-on-one time with me. You get 2 live events with me a month. It's a one-on-one Q&A session every month. And then actually I'm just going to start doing, we have a very active Facebook group. I'm going to start doing lives in there once a week to answer questions. And then we have a new masterclass every month on a different topic. And the great thing about the Pattern Place is because of my costume background, like we just had a class on hat making, and we've had a class on dyeing, and we've had a class on projector sewing. So it's not just pattern making, but it's just a great community and a great support. And there's a lot. We do a quarterly fitting class where it's a class all about fitting. And so it's a great way to learn about fitting. So it's just a little bit more robust and more of a I don't know. I want to make my own stuff and I just want the resources to, and then
get exposed to it all.
Right. And I can kind of guide you. Like once you know the foundations, I'm like, so what is it that you want to make? You want to check out this class or you want to check out that class. And I'm there to kind of guide a little bit more one-on-one in that arena. So.
Wow. Again, Trisha does it all.
Yeah.
And she wraps it up in the perfect little bow for you. So like you said, you can pick and choose how you want to do this and what you want to learn and how far you want to go with it. We do have links in the description and over on our website as well for her free pattern masterclass. So just to get you started, is this really something I want to do? And is this the approach that I'm going to learn best with? That's a great thing to start with. It's free. We're going to link the Pattern Making Academy with Mimi G that she teaches. We also are going to link.
So
yes, Ashley's done it. You've got some great resources over on your website, creativecostumeacademy.com, where you have slopers and tools and pattern paper and all those things that people can get to really get set up for success if they need those things. So you've just got resources everywhere. We'll link your Facebook group.
We'll
link it all. I know.
I'm working on it.
You're a vampire.
I'm working on getting more help. And the other thing I want to mention is I have a YouTube channel as well where I share. I have this thing in my community. It started on Instagram. I'm very heavy on Instagram. I'm very active on Instagram. But YouTube allows me to elaborate a little bit more, but we call it Tricky Thursday. Tricky is actually a nickname of mine. And so every week on YouTube, I share a tip or trick regarding, you know, related to pattern making or sewing that I've learned in my years of experience.
Nice. Yeah.
And then once a month I go live with another pattern maker, Charlotta Pattern Cutting School. And we talk about pattern nerd out and talk about all things pattern making. So that's another free resource that people can learn stuff from.
That's awesome.
Go subscribe to her YouTube channel.
Yes. So what's next? Like what are something that you want to accomplish within the next, I don't know, by the end of this year or within the next year that you're working towards right now? Or can you even tell us? I feel like there's always something in the works.
I would say, you know, my first step towards PatternCon is going to American Sewing Guild's yearly conference next weekend. So I'm slowly collecting information on how to make that a reality. And in doing that, streamlining all that's going on right now so that I have more time for that. We're also moving platforms. So right now, my community, my private community, the Pattern Place is on Teachable, but I felt limited there. So we're moving that all over to a different platform, Kajabi. So that's kind of in the background. Okay. That will happen before our next launch at the end of October. So that's kind of going to be my biggest project before the end of the year. And I've hired an OBM, online business manager, which I didn't know what that was until recently. But she's
that's super cool.
So I'm building out my team and building out my foundation so that I am able to
achieve
these more things and expand on. Just help. I just honestly really want nobody to be afraid of pattern making, to just dive in and start having fun with it and know that they can do it, even if you've been told you can't. And that's my biggest thing. And then eventually the bigger thing is to highlight the skills and the people who make it happen and give us a place to learn all the other cool stuff and pattern nerd out. Create a space for us pattern nerds out there.
I love it. I love it. I get real nerdy when it comes to like sewing and stuff. Yeah. So we all have our little things that we like hyper focus on we get really obsessive over. And what would mine be, Ashley? She can probably tell you.
I'm mind blanking.
Oh my gosh, girl. Stop. I'm like OCD and I like am so particular about how people take care of their machines.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
It's like my biggest pet peeve. So when I like go on YouTube and I watch a sewing tutorial and their machine is all gunky and full of stuff,
my air can, my compressed air.
Please do not.
If you want to make her really mad.
Oh, yeah. You don't like compressed air.
Mm-mm. Oh, no. Yes.
It just pushes it all deeper into the machine and into the engine, and you can't get it out, and you have to, and then people don't service their machines like they should. And
yeah,
you know, and they have all these issues. And I'm like, when was the last time you cleaned your machine? When was the last time you took that little plate off and like dusted it out? Like,
she's the mom of the group. She's always making sure we clean their room.
Like, I'm sorry, but at the end of the day, you come home, you take your bra off and you breathe. Your machine wants to breathe too. You got to clean it out. It's like taking your car to get an oil change and the tires rotated. And it's maintenance.
Nobody likes to do that.
It's not sexy.
But you still want to be able to drive your car and make it last.
But then I could buy a new car.
Okay, well, not everybody can buy a new sewing machine every 2 years.
It's important for me. We use mostly industrial machines here, which makes it harder to get service. So we have our guy Tommy. I'm like, Tommy, something's wrong.
He comes over
when something goes wrong. Yeah, I'm like, come help the girls out.
I have a lady that comes to the house, and what we do with my mom and her sewing friends and everything is we'll schedule her to come to like my mom's house, and then we'll all bring our machines there.
Oh,
and then we pay her for our machines, because it's like one house fee, like one visit, and then she can service all the machines. And she does a fantastic job. And depending on the type of the machine, the fee changes, but it's just the convenience. And then it's done that day, and I can take my machine home. I'm not waiting weeks or months to get my machine back, because a lot of us can't afford to go without. That's the one
that's
and only.
That's the problem, you know? Is that having to drop it off and then you're out of commission? Like, no.
Yeah. And I get that. But some people that, you know, if you're just casually sewing here and there, it's not as, you just clean it out and take care of it. But like, people who sew for business or sew every single day, like, that's your investment. You need to take care of it.
Absolutely.
And we got to prioritize that, you know, like, you wouldn't drive your car on a vacation with your family. If the check engine light's on, you would go get that thing serviced before you hit the road with your car full of kids. I don't know.
I feel like I might do that.
That's not true. Cause you went and got your car fixed and an oil change and everything before you drove here in June.
But that's cause I was alone. But if I'm with my husband, I'm like, if anything happens, then he'll figure it out.
As you can tell, I get a little nerdy and a little passionate about this, but I just want people to have the best sewing experience and be set up for success. And it literally takes 5 minutes to just stop and clean it out.
And there's nothing worse, especially if you're doing it for business. Like, I've been there. Yeah. You're trying to beat a deadline and you're like, oh my God, my machine isn't working. Yeah.
And it was so funny. The industrials, you know how they have like a little spring on it where it just right. I was telling the one girl we had on the podcast, Nicole, who came to retreat. I'm like, just so you know, that little spring is going to break one day. Do you have replacements? Sure. And she's like, no. And I'm like, you have a business.
You need to have a backup.
Yeah. And she's like, okay, I'll buy some. And I think she didn't buy some, and it broke.
And
so she had to wait for it to come out. And I'm like, I told you, because that happened to me. I got the part from like England. It took like 3 weeks to get here.
For industrials is to, I always print out, because they're usually, I buy the used ones, but I always print out the manual. Because I have,
mine doesn't even come with a manual.
Go find it.
I did. It's literally a schematic of it taken apart and put back together. There's not even like a manual. It's from like the 70s. It's a Mitsubishi.
Because usually they'll have like a, you know, troubleshooting or like setting the time. Like, I have set the timing on my surgeries in a pinch, because I'm like, this has to get done by tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, we're going to do it.
It's amazing nowadays what you can find like the parts for. So I have an older serger from my pre-Singer days, and it just has been sitting and collecting dust, but I actually had sewn some thick denim on it that I shouldn't have, and I bent the loopers. So it wouldn't work anymore. And but it's just been sitting and collecting dust. And I have a friend who's wanting to get into sewing. So I gifted her my old sewing machine that I wasn't using anymore. And then I had the serger, and she's starting to get into garments, which she really needs this. And so $30 off Amazon. I got two loopers and two new blades. Nice. And because I, you know, those blades you needed, I had this one for a long time and I ran a business with it. I made bandanas with it. So I was like, okay, let me just go ahead and change the blades, change the loopers. I oiled it. It's I cleaned that sucker out really good. It looks brand new and she's set up for success. I put new needles in it. I'm going to gift that to her because it literally cost me $30 to, but I mean, it wasn't hard. Like I was like, I don't know if I can do this, you know, but then I was like, you know what?
With
it's
what
a pretty standard serger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. You got to have a serger. You got to have a serger. I think I was listening to one of your podcasts. Maybe it was Ellie and Mac that I was listening to. And you guys were talking about your serger. And I was literally sitting at my serger going, oh, yeah. Got to have a serger. And
I would say out of a sewing machine and a serger, I would say a serger is probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah. It's so fun.
The first time, well, and you know, I've noticed from working in costume shops, like guys seem to be drawn to the serger because like, it's fast and like,
a car.
It's like,
loud.
The needle wheel or the rotary cutters, like that, if they're around, that's what gets grabbed. Like, that's the first thing that they're drawn to. And just going, talking about sewing denim and your machine not liking it, like, In the costume world, I am always sewing things on my machines that I should probably not be sewing. My machine guy that I had in Vegas, he's like, do I want to know what you're sewing with us? I'm like, probably not.
Look away.
Just
look
away. It work again.
It's funny.
Yeah. I was hemming a pair of my dad's jeans and I was doing fine, but the I should have removed that bulk of the seam and I didn't. Because I was trying to pick and I got one pent leg done fine. Yeah. And then I went to do the second pent leg and the first seam was fine. The last seam got me. It got me.
It's always the last one.
Yeah, it's right.
And then it sat there. Yeah, it was literally that. I was like, he got his pants. They fit. They're great. But that machine was not a heavy duty machine. It was not meant to sew through.
No.
Folded.
I actually had to go to industrial sergers because I was working on a project one time and I had burnt, like something had happened with the motor in mine that I had to send it and they kept it for a week and I'm like, I gotta keep working. So I borrowed my friend's serger and I was using hers and then burned out the motor on her serger. And I was like, that's it. And they were trying to sell me on, you know, the biggest, fanciest, newest serger. And I was like, no, I need heavy duty, like beefy. She's not going to get upset about anything. Going to sew no matter what. And that's when I'm
going to grunt through it and like it.
Yeah. But that was kind of the thing for me. I just, you know, I put my machines under a lot of stress. But
I would have more industrials if I had more space.
That's the thing. Right? Like industrials just, is space.
They all come on a table.
They do.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice they do.
Yeah.
But it is.
And a big motor.
But they're not cute. They're not cute, though. Right?
They're not.
They're not.
Mine's not. I mean, mine, like I said, it's from the 70s. It's not cute.
Yeah.
Just put some stickers on it.
Yeah, there you go. Bling a little, some bejewels.
Put some neon lights on it. Make it, I don't know. That would be fun. Dress it up. Dress it up. I would love an industrial sewing machine. That's like my bucket list. I would love to get one. I too have no idea where in this tiny house it's going to go.
Yeah.
Because every square inch is accounted for at the moment. So we might be losing a sofa in the process, but... We don't need to be sitting there watching TV anyways.
It's hard to go back. Like, there are things that I can do without even thinking about it on my industrials that I'm like, even my, I have a Bernina 1008 is what I usually, that's the one I bought to travel with. It's pretty reliable, but sometimes something that sews with no problem on my industrial machines, I'm struggling to get it to not skip stitches and things like that. So I really notice it. Like when I was working at Jersey Boys, I'd be working on stuff during the day in my shop. And then I'd go into work. And if nothing was going crazy, we didn't have to switch out anything, then I could work on my stuff. And I'd be using our domestic machines. And I'm like, oh, it's not working. So it, you know, when I think when you're sewing every day, when you're doing it as a business and you're putting it under that kind of stress, is when you really want to at least consider it. Cause it does make a big difference with just the ease of blowing through.
Yeah. I want to do more bag making and I bought all the supplies and I sit down at my FOF, and it
you don't want to break that machine. Thing, man.
I don't want to break it. It costs more than my car, but but I, you know, I just it can handle a lot. It's got some killer piercing power. Like, it's a strong machine, but like the material just wants to stick to the machine. Yeah, and all this. Yeah. And so you know, that's frustrating. So then I'm like, okay, well, let me just pull out my Singer Heavy Duty, because those things are pretty dang strong.
They are pretty, yeah.
They are pretty dang strong, and it was doing good. But again, the material wants to stick to my machine, and it's so sometimes it's the material you're sewing with. But it got me frustrated with it, and I was like, screw this. So I just like, I'm just decided that if I'm going to enjoy this bag making process, I feel like I really need an industrial machine.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, and that's
where my mind's
foot.
At.
Christmas is coming.
Oh no, I had the walking foot, and I had the all Teflon foot, and I had all of that. Like, and
your foot fetish Fridays, I love it.
Oh yeah, my foot fetish Fridays. I've got all the accessories clever. To make it possible. It was more the material.
Yeah.
It's a TPU that's sticky, and it just wants to stick to your machine.
The TPU vinyl. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just a learning thing, and I'm trying to figure out ways to make it workable and still enjoyable. Because if it's not enjoyable, I'm not going to want to do it.
Well, yeah. No blame there.
We'll see. We'll get there.
All right.
Well, Trisha,
This
has been super fun. I feel like we've learned so much more about you, which I love. I can't wait to see what you do next. I'm excited about all the things that you shared. I'm excited for our listeners to get more encouragement to try pattern making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're in great hands with you. So I highly, highly encourage them to take that step. At least check out that free masterclass. Just dip your toes in. It can't hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you see if it's for you. Nothing makes me happier than people who are drafting their own patterns and they're like, I did it. And I'm like, you did it, you know, and that's like the best feeling ever. And honestly, I just want that for everyone. I want everyone to have the superpower, and it's possible. It's possible.
It is a superpower. I love that you call it that.
Yeah.
Ashley and I now have a superpower.
You have a superpower.
We're still honing in our superpower, though.
I'm still not making it all the way through the walls and like cracking sometimes, but one day
we'll get there. So guys, coming up next, we have Handmade by Elizabeth. Now, if you're not following her on Instagram or TikTok and you're into bag making, or maybe you're not and you just want to like watch her bag making videos, are fantastic. And she just made the cutest Barbie handbag, like Barbie themed. I mean, she embroidered on it. I mean, it is to the nines. I'm obsessed. So she's our next guest. So be sure to tune in next week to hear from Elizabeth and all of her bag making tips. Maybe she'll give me some good ones to help me get through this TPU issue that I'm having. Cause I watch her sew it and I'm like, if she can do it, I can.
We're
going to ask her all the bag making questions next week. But again, Trisha, thank you so much for being here with us. Cool. We appreciate it. As always, you guys know that you can not only stream our podcast on any major channel, but you can also watch it over on our YouTube channel. So be sure to hop over there and subscribe. And we have these amazing newsletters that come out every single week to let you know who our guest is, get a little introduction before you listen to the podcast. So be sure to subscribe to our newsletter over on our website. Ashley does a fantastic job with those. So thank you, Ashley, for that. And of course, we'll see you next time. So happy sewing. Bye.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.